Welcome to the Simply Authentic podcast, where we hope to embolden you with discipline, personal growth, and abundance to live your most authentic life. Welcome back to the Simply Authentic podcast. I'm Angie Mullings.
And I'm Tanya Murfin. And we have an exciting guest with us today. We have Teresa Mealy. She is a family nurse practitioner specializing in the last 10 years in bioidentical hormones and metabolic health.
Yes.
These are really hot topics that we are here for you to talk about today, Teresa. Yay. So thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you
for having me.
So let's get started by you just telling us a little bit of your background, why you got into medicine to begin with, and kind of what your path has been to lead up to the last 10 years being in that medicine.
Most of the time when people like me get into what we could call it alternative medicine or functional medicine is because we had our own issues. So I've been a nurse practitioner for 20 years now, but I had babies late. I had twin boys at 36. And after, I had some postpartum depression. And I remember thinking, oh gosh, they're just going to put me on the birth control pill and an antidepressant. And in my heart of hearts, I was like, I know I don't have an antidepressant deficiency or a birth control deficiency. I feel like there's something hormonal, but nobody was talking about hormones in my little realm that I was in. So I ended up going on Lexapro because I still didn't know.
Right.
And about 4 years later, I found hormones. I happened to watch a news show with Suzanne Summers on there talking about hormones. Mm-hmm. And I just melted because all I had been doing was crying and not functioning very well, thinking I was totally crazy. Mm-hmm. But here I was only 40 or 41. Mm-hmm. And I remember calling my husband in like, oh, I'm not crazy. Well, not all the way. But I think I have hormone and there's people talking about it that I just wasn't aware of. So bought her book, went and saw a physician that I ended up knowing, but not knowing that he was doing hormones, got on hormones. And 3 months later, I thought, what is this? I got to go figure this out. I got to go shout it from the rooftops. I got to tell all women that I know. And I do treat men too, but I tell patients that going back for food, nutrition, and hormones cost way more than my master's degree ever did. So I've been on hormones now for 11 years. I've been on progesterone and testosterone and thyroid since I was about 42. I'll be 53 next month, and I started estradiol on my 50th birthday. And there's no way I'd be doing what I'm doing now without that, because I was a hot mess. Which is how patients come into my office.
That's right. So what has led us to have you in here, Teresa, is that I'm a patient of yours, and I went through my own experience with knowing that I had either been through menopause or was right at its door, and found to not have any hormones left in my body. So I'm post-menopause. Didn't know it, and saw several medical doctors that wouldn't do anything about it. And they didn't even want to prescribe Premarin, the big pharma drug. The OBGYN I saw didn't even want to prescribe that. It was like getting, it was like pulling teeth for me to get her to write me that script.
Right.
And with no opinion given. So I set out on a trajectory to figure out for my own self of what I should be doing. And then I went to two medical doctors who said they had went on bioidentical hormones. So I knew if two women MDs were saying it was okay, that it had to be okay for me too. So then I came to see you. We did lots of blood work and you gave me a full picture of what vitamins I should be taking, what eating I should be doing. And then obviously I went on the hormones. And I have to say my own experience, I want to say within a week I felt better. It was so fast. And I have now for 3 or 4 years, I can't remember how many years it's been now, but just been right here, which is, I feel great, you know? So in saying all of that, this is a big topic and it's a hot topic. And I'm also finding that it's a topic that women don't talk about because they're either shut down by a physician or they don't feel heard at all. And so they just really leave feeling like they're not heard and really not doing anything about it because they don't know where else to go. So Angie and I have both listened to numerous podcasts and had numerous conversations with friends of ours. And it all comes back to having another option. And so I want you to tell us in your experience, and now that you've been practicing this for 10 years, tell us what that looks like from your side of the fence.
Yeah, every single day I have new patients come in and they tell me the same. It's the same story. It's
yes.
just a different provider. Could be a nurse practitioner, PA doctor.
Sure.
It's the same story, but every single day the hackles on my neck, my hair stands up. I mean, it's just so frustrating.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's gaslighting. It is, you're too young to have hormone problems. Mm-hmm. You're too old to have hormone problems. They don't do anything about it anyway. And all they get offered is antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's across the board. So people, the other problem with me is I'm cash pay because mm-hmm. what I do, there's no codes for
right.
insurance.
Right.
So sometimes people don't find me for a while, but many times I have noticed the average providers that people have been through have been about 5 to 7. They go to through 5, and it's not one after the other. You know, you got to wait
sure.
to get in 6 to 8
yeah,
months
right.
now with anybody.
Right. Yep.
And then you get talked down to, you get demeaned, mm-hmm. You get pretty fearful, some of them get yelled at.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it takes another 3 to 4 months for them to work up the courage. Then they call and they got to wait 6 to 8 months to mm-hmm. get in with someone. I mean, it is just years of our life, and we're only
yeah.
here for a snapshot. Like
right.
in eternity, it's just a small little snapshot,
yeah.
but here they are wasting years and years. So my primary patients, now I am getting a lot of PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder, mm-hmm. where young women are almost suicidal. Mm. When they have their periods,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, they get offered antidepressants. But I had one young girl who was like, I think she was 21, and I see her mom. And she got admitted to the psychiatric unit here in town. And it's like her third or fourth time. And so finally I said, does any of this happen around your periods? And she had to think for a second. She goes, you know what? I had to ask for a pad when I was in there. I was on my period.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the hormonal issues...
Yeah.
We just get labeled, females get labeled histrionic. But when your hormones, some of us have extreme hormonal changes throughout the month,
yeah.
and it can cause bad things. But most of my patients are perimenopause and menopause.
Mm-hmm.
So perimenopause starts around 37, 38. If you were like me, had babies, I was on bed rest at week 18. My babies mm-hmm. were born at 29 weeks.
Wow.
I was left to make progesterone on my own. Okay, I'm old. I already was mm-hmm. having a problem, or mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been put on preterm
mm-hmm.
or bed rest from preterm labor.
Right.
I was under extreme stress. My mom died 3 weeks after the babies were born unexpectedly. So I'm supposed to just start making progesterone. No.
Yeah.
But instead mm-hmm. I got Lexapro. But anyway, so 37 to about 55 is perimenopause, which sucks. It's
yes.
hard.
Mm-hmm.
Your
yes.
life is up and down. This is usually the time when marriages can get rocky because it just can, you know, like your kids are getting older and then suddenly you're left with this person and you're like, oh, who are you again? And
mm-hmm.
sex is gone and kids are moving around and you just are at this place where you don't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, menopausal women is a big part of that, too. And everyone's a little different. I personally started estrogen on my 50th birthday, but I have one woman, I just put her on estrogen and she just turned 58.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all over mm-hmm. the place. It's not cookie cutter. It's individualized, and the only way to know is if you do labs.
Yeah.
But if you're too young, they say you're too young to have hormone problems, but all corporate medicine, I call it corporate medicine, all corporate medicine providers are looking for is if you're in menopause. So yeah, you're not going to be in menopause mm-hmm. at 37, 38, 42, 45,
right.
but
right.
you're still having craziness because you have low progesterone.
Right. Yeah. So in the perimenopause era
mm-hmm.
before you actually go through menopause,
yes.
you're not having
mm-hmm.
periods anymore. Do women experience the same things as they would at menopause? Is perimenopause kind of your body amping up for here's how I'm going to behave for the next
mm-hmm.
10 years? Is that usual, or are the symptoms for peri a little different than post-menopause?
I think they're the same, except in menopause, you get hot flashes, night sweats, dry vagina, painful sex. That's menopause.
Okay.
Perimenopause and menopause, you just get fatigued, you can't sleep, you're starting to gain weight, because as soon as you can't sleep, you activate cortisol. Cortisol gives you belly fat. So women are like, mm-hmm. I have never had weight gain
mm-hmm.
here, and they point to their belly. And then losing progesterone makes you not sleep. As soon as you don't sleep, you get cortisol activated. That's belly fat. Then as soon as you don't sleep and cortisol is activated, you get weird cravings. So you're eating weird foods. So now you're gaining weight because you're eating bad. But it's really just an apathy of life. You just start to not really care. Mm-hmm. You get in fights with your husband or your, because men have it too, or your wife. I mean, you just, I had a woman say, I know my husband and kids were hiding from me. I found them in a room. They acted like they were playing games and doing things, but they were hiding from me. Mm. And my husband said, yeah, we were hiding from you. We have to walk on eggshells. Mm. It is just not fun. It is not easy when you're trying to actually live life and deal with that. Progesterone is the first thing that goes for women. And that is the hormone of contentment, helps with anxiety, depression, sleep, and an evenness of mood. So perimenopausal women, you're worried about things that don't even matter in your world. You're worried about things that are 6 degrees away from you, like your friend's cousin's mother had an interaction with someone and it annoyed you because it was a big deal. It was drama-filled. Okay, but you have no that's not your business.
Right.
You just become irrational, overthinking, emotional. You say things that people around you don't say out loud, but they're like, boy, that reaction really does not fit this situation. You know you're being illogical and irrational. And as it's coming out, you're like, you shouldn't say that. And there it goes. And there is nothing that can stop it.
In a couple of podcasts I've been listening to, they will say, this is for the perimenopause, menopausal women, and the people who love those people.
Right.
Because... you got to give some grace, right? Yeah. But if you don't know, if this person just out of the blue, it seems like out of the blue, their behavior changes, their moods are swinging, we need to start, first of all, we have a lack of communication in our country, period. But and we're too busy doing this. But so that's the first problem. But secondly, they need to start asking questions. So I've got a couple of questions based on what you've been talking about. First of all, take it back to basics. When the majority of your clients come to you, what kind of symptoms are they experiencing?
Okay. Fatigue, can't sleep, more anxious, more emotional, crying. I never cried before. Rage, anger, getting mad at everything, weight gain, just not feeling a joy of life.
Okay. So,
and low libido.
Okay.
Sex drive.
So if they're seeing an MD and just is there a reason to come see you if there's not all of those symptoms?
No, not necessarily. But I mean, those symptoms are so prevalent.
Yes.
It's like, it's just like everyone has them.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen anyone that doesn't. And now, truth be told, our environment, like you said, everyone's on their phone. You've got this, all these dopamine hits with your phone. We're eating terrible food that's making us also hot messes and up and down roller coasters of sugar. So there are some things early on that can be done, like changing your food, getting better sleep. But sometimes it's very difficult to figure out how to manage that. When your brain is so chaotic without progesterone. I remember, well, first of all, my husband said after I went on hormones, he said, okay, for sure I loved you all the time, but you are way easier. This is way easier. Okay, because it's hard to do life when you feel like that.
Sure. Yes.
And you have a companion. And then also I just felt like I knew things were going off the rails, but my kids were little because I had babies late. And I just describe it as tornadoes in my head, like a few things going around. You know, a tornado moves fast. You could never just pull it down and fix it. After I went on hormones, I felt like those things slowed. So then I could just reach up and say, I'm gonna tackle this one right now. I'm going to tackle this. And everything just fell into place. But when people, women, get like this, you're right, communication goes. So what are you going to do? Complain every single time? Well, you'd be complaining. Now your husband's going to be like, I'm not listening anymore.
Right.
The kid, I mean, and it just creates havoc in relationships.
Yeah. So I could see where some people would have those symptoms and not think too much about it, right? Because
a
I'm
couple
just getting...
of them. You have a couple. You start not sleeping.
Fatigue.
Exactly. You just don't sleep anymore.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And you're more tired than usual.
Right.
But not putting your finger on it.
Yes. Right.
I'm just getting older. Or I'm just... I could see how a lot of women could talk themselves out of taking a step further to, to try and figure out if there was indeed something that could be done about those things.
And one of my biggest arguments, and maybe you can share your opinion on this, is that, so we're all around the same age, okay? We're early 50s.
Yep.
Why do we not know about this as women as we grow up? Why is this topic and the topic of us being bitchy? I'm going to use that word mm-hmm. because over the years of me being on my period and being married and being in a mood, I got described as being bitchy.
Right.
Why is there not a bigger understanding and explanation for us women? And I know that some of the men are included in this conversation. They just don't know it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the majority of us who are women are going to feel some of this. We yes. are going mm-hmm. to go through this. Why are we not taught this when we're young?
Well, big healthcare, so the corporations that run healthcare, we aren't taught any of this in school. So it's a little bit of a pet peeve when patients come back to me and they say, So after I get them feeling better, then they go tell their doctor about it. So
right.
then
mm-hmm.
they're like, my doctor said I shouldn't do hormones. Well, your doctor didn't learn this in school. I didn't learn this in school. We don't learn nutrition in school. Mm-hmm. So it would be like coming to me asking, how should my neurosurgeon do neurosurgery on my brain?
Right.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
I'm not your girl.
Yeah.
So don't go ask them for, you know, food and hormones. Mm-hmm. But we don't learn it.
Right.
The only thing we learn in school is if a woman has had cancer, she can't have hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And then Premarin, pregnant horse pee.
Mm-hmm.
is the estrogen of choice and, you know, some other little fallacies, but we just aren't taught it. It is not a big money-making in today's mm-hmm. healthcare. So what I say is the little compounding medicine that I send over to my compounding pharmacy in Utah is not making them a ton of money. But for instance, switch to males, in the old days before our time in the 40s and 50s, we used to treat prostate cancer in men with estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, and I know a couple, there's a cardiac thoracic surgeon who's one of my friends is treating his prostate cancer. He's on 10 milligrams of estrogen. It probably costs him $300 every 3 months. What mm-hmm. they use now is LHRH antagonist. It's $10,000 a month injectable.
Wow.
So why do you think we don't learn this stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's no money to be made in it.
Yeah.
And I think it's generational, right?
Right. And it's this myths that are perpetuated. Mm-hmm. Testosterone causes prostate cancer. Hormones cause
right.
breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And then doctors or providers mm-hmm. then spout that off and they just perpetuate that myth instead of going and looking some things up on their own.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And that myth was actually, well, one of the bigger ones, was derived from a study done in the 90s.
Yes.
And I've heard all this on a podcast
yep.
or
mm-hmm.
several of them
yep.
that was done on actual older females
yes.
that were post-menopause, or most of them
yes.
believed to be. And that whole study in the 90s, and I remember, you know, as a younger girl listening to that and hearing that, oh, taking hormone therapy in mm-hmm. menopause causes breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk about
yes.
that just mm-hmm. a tiny bit?
For sure. That's the Women's Health Initiative, so the WHI. And I was actually in GYN at the time, and we ripped all females off hormones. They were the phones were ringing off the hook.
Wow.
People were crying, like, what do we do now? We were just like, sorry, like the emoji of the shoulder shrug, like we don't know
right.
what to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So the Women's Health Initiative was a study based on Premarin, pregnant horse pee,
mm-hmm.
and Provera. It was Provera that caused breast cancer. It was so mm-hmm. obvious. They stopped that arm early. They mm-hmm. continued with the pregnant horse pee estrogen, though.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is Provera, the other name for it is medroxyprogesterone. And in many of the studies, and now I'm dating myself, we used to have a big, huge book for, you went and looked up pharmacy, the medicines,
yeah.
and it was tiny, tiny print. But now you can Google it. Even if you Google medroxyprogesterone, in many of the studies and in articles, they'll cut off the medroxy prefix and they'll call it progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't know the difference, and I had to see a GYN at Mercy in 2018 for an ovarian issue, and he said to me, you just need the birth control. And I was like, I don't, I'm 49 at the time or 48. And he said, but don't worry, I have a progesterone-only birth control. And I was just like, good Lord, you don't. It's a progestin. It's like you eating a banana, but telling me you're eating an apple. It's clearly a different size, shape, smell, taste, okay? So yeah. This is what you're up against. But it was Provera. And sometimes if you don't pay for the study, the conclusion will say, therefore, progesterone should be used with caution as it increases incidence of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. But if you bought the study, the whole study is about medroxyprogesterone.
Mm-hmm.
But the conclusion, they call it progesterone, which they've done a couple times. Patients will send me articles sometimes, and I'll have to tell them, I don't know what they're talking about. It's an estrogen article one person sent me. I don't know if it's conjugated equine estrogen, which is horse pee, mm-hmm. or if it's estradiol, which is what I'm taking personally. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's Provera. That arm was stopped early. It has a black box warning right now, currently, for breast cancer. About every quarter, I get a woman in with that's taking Provera, and I always say, did your provider tell you that there's a black box warning for breast cancer? And the answer is always no. Mm. Okay, Premarin, pregnant horse pee, is the estrogen arm of that, and there's really not many things wrong with that if you're a younger woman. Mm-hmm. It has an increased incidence of clots for heart attack and stroke. However, statistically speaking, not humanity, it's only 30 per 10,000. That's not a lot of statistics compared to some of the drugs that they prescribe these days.
Yeah.
But the problem with the Women's Health Initiative, you alluded to that, the mean age for that study was 62 or 63. That means, I just told you I started estrogen on my 50th birthday. Mm-hmm. Had I waited to age 63, that's a lot of time to grow plaques on my arteries, even though I eat really well. Mm-hmm. When you don't have estrogen, you don't have protection on your vessels. So they also didn't tell you that most of the women were overweight. About a third of them were actually obese. Mm-hmm. We all know insulin, because if you're obese, you have a ton of insulin. Mm-hmm. That is a problem with heart attack and stroke. They also didn't tell you that a lot of them were smokers, and a lot of them had already had heart attack and stroke.
Right.
So it was not a pristine study, but still we just like took it as, you know, science. And there is a great book that lays the whole thing out. It's called Estrogen Matters by Avram Bloomberg, I think, it's a fascinating book. It lays everything out. But we don't use Premarin and we don't use Provera. But when you go into corporate medicine, like my guy at Mercy thinks progestin is a progesterone. You could not give Provera to a pregnant woman. It's a category X. That means you can't give it. It would cause a miscarriage. I give progesterone to pregnant women all the time on the side that are pregnant because their OBs won't. They've had histories of miscarriages or polycystic ovarian syndrome, which means you don't make progesterone. And so I give them progesterone their whole pregnancy because progesterone is the hormone of gestation along with everything else I listed earlier. So
that's a whole nother arm of that that nobody's talking about. And you certainly wouldn't know that or hear that in your MD's office.
Right.
And I don't mean to be, you know, slamming MDs. I appreciate and I have a huge respect for our medical doctors everywhere. Yes. My brother's a medical doctor. He would be disappointed if he knew I was sitting here talking poorly about them. I'm not. I just am amazed at the lack of willingness to listen or in my viewpoint or read something different, read a different point of view.
Yes.
And I get it, you know, Christianity or religion could be the same way, right? Yes. You read and interpret something differently than I do.
Yes.
And that's good. We can still be friends. I just don't understand why you have so many cases of so many women not feeling well.
Yes.
And then the aspect, and one of the whole reasons that I wanted to come to you to begin with was for the cardiovascular side of it, because one of the things that my MD brother did say to me when I told him I have zero hormones in my body, oh, you've got to go on estrogen because you got to protect your heart because we have heart disease in our family. And I was like, what? So he knew that, and he's a dermatologist.
And see, here's the thing. With the medical providers, there's limitations, and they don't know it, just like I didn't know it 20 years ago when I graduated nurse practitioner school. Our books and the people that make the curriculum are big pharma. But it doesn't go right back to the big pharmaceutical companies. They're subsidiaries. And so you don't understand it at the time, but medicine now is a pill for an ill. Medicine to me should be, you know, colds and flus if you have UTIs and stuff like that. But then also, if a heart attack, let's not try to take some turmeric and go about our business.
Of course.
If you get a gunshot wound, don't like put silver on it and, you know,
go home.
Like there are reasons that we need expertise.
Absolutely.
But we have fallen far from where we used to be. And people get in trouble. Like I have, there's a nurse practitioner that sends me a lot of people because my name's written on a little piece of paper that she slides to patients because she gets in trouble.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So I come to you for the first time. What process do you go through?
Yes. So I spend an hour with you at your first visit, and I'm just really getting your history. Mm-hmm. I spend probably about 40 minutes listening to all that you have to say. I want to know your period history, your baby history, all kinds of things, your family history. And then I do spend about 20 minutes talking about food and hormones, like the Women's Health mm-hmm. Initiative. And we just go a little bit into further detail about that. Then I send you for labs. My lab work is not extensive, but it is a lot. They generally, the first time, draw about 14 tubes of blood on you.
Okay.
And then I bring you back in 10 days. We go line by line over things, mm-hmm. and I just figure out what you're going to need. Most women early on need progesterone and testosterone. And then I optimize thyroid as well, even though the endocrinologists in town are always threatening to report me to the board. They don't like me doing any of this. They don't like me doing thyroid. Thyroid and testosterone are the feel-good hormones for men and women. Mm-hmm. So just because labs are normal doesn't mean they're optimal. Mm-hmm. So there's an endocrinologist who's in my circle, and he sat on the initial board to come up with men for testosterone levels. He's like, we came up with 300. Wasn't based on research. None of us had studies out. We didn't have literature out. We just were sitting having some drinks, and we thought 300 is a nice round number. Looks good. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Let's pick that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So optimal levels versus normal levels don't mean anything. Mm. Also, what societies and stuff do is they kind of take an average of a population. So when you go to Quest to get labs or LabCorp, you sign the fine print that they can accumulate data mm-hmm. and kind of see where us, like 50-year-old mm-hmm. women, sit. Mm-hmm. Okay. 88% of our population is metabolically unwell. Mm-hmm. I think they just did a new study and it's 92 now, mm-hmm. but 88% of our population is
that
unwell.
That is crazy.
So do I want to be in a cohort of 88% that's unwell? No. I would like to be in the elite top 2%. That's where I want
to be. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you brought it up. So let's define what metabolic health is, because mm-hmm. yes, just listened to a podcast and they were saying the same thing, that in 2019, only 12% of the population were healthy yes. in terms of their metabolic health.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And now it's down to whatever you said,
6 or 2%.
Yeah,
I think,
8%. Yeah. So talk to us about metabolic health, because it is sort of a buzzword, but I don't think a lot of people know what that means.
Yeah. Metabolic health is really important because it just talks about the relationship that your body has with sugar and insulin. And so the way we are eating now is not the way that our grandparents ate. Okay. Mm-hmm. When we were, because it changed in about 1977 to 1980, mm-hmm. we came out with Pop-Tarts and Toaster Strudel mm-hmm. and flavored oatmeal yep. and all these cereals.
Quick fixes.
Right.
Yeah.
Boxed things, mm-hmm. Hamburger Helper.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we all became sick because of that. So when you get diagnosed at your provider's office with diabetes or prediabetes, by the time you have abnormal lab work, you've been sick for at least 15 years. So I tell, and we do What's for Dinner every night on Facebook, and we talk about this. Mm-hmm. But I say there's a pre-diabetes stage and a full-blown diabetes stage. I'm saying there's not much difference, okay? None of us walked around when we were 2 months pregnant and said, I'm pre-pregnant. In 6 months, I'll be pregnant. Like, what is that?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
You either
right.
have a problem with sugar or you don't.
Yeah.
So when you eat certain foods, like carbohydrates.
Uh-huh.
And remember, sugar is not just Milky Way or Skittles. Carbohydrates turn to sugar in your mouth when you're chewing them.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet potatoes, rice, beans, oatmeal. What I used to have every morning for breakfast, honey bunches of oats or raisin bran with banana,
mm-hmm.
all sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So we're eating too much of that stuff mm-hmm. and we're eating all day long now. So Dr. Fung, who is a nephrologist in Canada, he's the intermittent fasting guru.
Mm-hmm.
He did a study or talked about a study. Most of us eat 14.7 times a day. Okay. And I remember thinking, how is that even possible? But you know, when you walk by your coworker's desk and there's Hershey Kisses mm-hmm. and you take one. So mm-hmm. anytime you initiate digestion 14.7 times, mm. our body was never designed to do that.
No.
There is a bell curve for everything. And I do think there are some people that could eat 3 meals a day, but most of us, 2 meals a day, that's probably it.
Mm-hmm.
But we snack all day long. It's akin to, if you drive your car around for work, like realtors,
mm-hmm.
that's what I always say, you
mm-hmm.
do not stop at every gas station and put gas in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, because by the end of the day, where would you be putting the gas? Like your back seat, your trunk, because your
right.
gas tank is full. So that's essentially, we are overfeeding our body, But because we're eating so much sugar, whether it's carbohydrates or straight sugar, your body can't access it. So people are walking around with 100 to 200 extra pounds, mm-hmm. but they can't ever access it. They're nutrient deprived, even though they look like they've got plenty of fat storage. Mm-hmm. So every time your insulin goes up, that means if you sit down and you have a chicken breast with rice and a sweet potato, that's sugar. Mm-hmm. It activates your insulin. That activates the clotting cascade, which is the stroke and heart attack clots. Mm-hmm. And then your insulin has to respond. Mm-hmm. And then that just sets you up for roller coasters, sugar roller coasters, craving all the time. You want your insulin to be nice and low. Mm-hmm. And then you have people against that saying, well, then your body's going to forget what to do. Well, I was on the pill for quite a while and prevented pregnancy. And when I finally got pregnant, my body didn't forget what it's supposed to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We were divinely made to just be perfect, our right. body. If right. you support your body, it's going to do what it needs to do. Sometimes people get pretty upset when they come in because they're suddenly sick. And I say, your body has been telling you for years. Mm-hmm. Starts as a whisper, mm-hmm. gets a little louder, mm-hmm. and then eventually it doesn't let you do much more. And then suddenly you're sick. You're not just suddenly sick. Your body's been giving you clues for a long time.
Right. And that is one thing that I was listening to or reading about metabolic health, is that we've taken the we've taken that out of our medical equation, right? We don't think about how we feel anymore. We don't pay attention yes. to the little signals that our body is giving mm-hmm. us,
because we're too busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and our society equates busyness with like worth and mm-hmm. like how important mm-hmm. you are. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I'm at the ball field 6 days a week till 10 o'clock at night. Well, gag me.
Good for you.
No thanks. But right. you know what I mean? Like, right. and then yeah. you're too yeah. busy to eat good. You're too busy to sleep good. You're too right. busy to all the other things. Yeah. By the time you get diagnosed with diabetes in healthcare, again, you've been sick for a long time. You've done a lot of damage. So mm-hmm. we can prevent that and we can reverse that. So high blood pressure. Metabolic syndrome is elevated glucose, elevated insulin, high blood pressure, height to waist ratio. So if your waist is more than double your height, mm-hmm. it should be less than half. These are all things you can just Google and do online. But mm-hmm. a lot of those things will show up before you even get diagnosed with diabetes in the provider's office. Mm-hmm. You can Google HOMAIR, H-O-M-A-I-R. Mm-hmm. You put in your fasting glucose and your fasting insulin. It'll tell you if you're insulin resistant. Now, if you come back with an A1C, which is your diabetic marker, mm-hmm. at pre-diabetes, I don't need those other things because I know you have an insulin problem. Mm-hmm. But this can pick it up way before your A1C elevates, because I have twin boys, identical twin boys. One makes a ton of insulin, so he is not going to be a diabetic for a long time, but he will be fat. And I use the word fat to be concise. It's really inflammation, okay? But for your listeners, okay. I'm being concise. I have the other one that, if you know football, the one with that makes a lot of insulin looks like a linebacker, mm-hmm. if he goes off his diet. Mm-hmm. His lifestyle. Mm-hmm. The other one looks like Tom Brady no matter what he does. Mm-hmm. So they're both addicts, because we're all food addicts.
Right.
So I said to the Tom Brady one, like, you're an addict, but your physique doesn't change, so you don't have to worry mm-hmm. about it. He said, yeah, nothing ever changes. But he said, I don't eat carbs before work because I can't concentrate. I can't complete a sentence. I can't focus. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so if you make a lot of insulin, you're going to scoot past these corporate medicine tests, because you're not going to be a diabetic. But mm-hmm. we have other things that can tell us long before you get diagnosed that you are sick, metabolically speaking.
Yeah. Interesting.
So what would your recommendation be with those kind of examples that you gave? Mm-hmm. You've got somebody who has a family history, let's say, of diabetes, insulin resistance, whatever, and they would say, oh, I'm completely healthy. I have no health problems.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
At what age would you tell somebody to start looking at their blood work or have a good blood panel done?
Today's day and age, like my kids' age, which are going to be 17,
yeah.
because you can see 20-ish. The one's insulin, he makes double the insulin of the Tom Brady kid. So you can start seeing trends. And if he wasn't, if they didn't live with me, he wouldn't know, oh, I need to eat more high protein and low mm-hmm. carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. So even me, I used to teach aerobics 6 days a week. I was in the gym for hours before kids. I was always 35 pounds overweight and pre-diabetic, and I couldn't understand why. Mm-hmm. It's because I would wake up and have my whole wheat bagel or my Honey Bunches of Oats, mm-hmm. my mm-hmm. sandwich, my fat-free potato chips, my whole wheat mm-hmm. pasta, all that
carbs.
Is everything I listed as
right.
sugar.
Right. No,
but you act like it's real food.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not real food.
No.
I learned a lot. I'm gluten intolerant, so I learned a lot when I read the book Wheat Belly.
Yes, he's amazing.
Amazing. And it was so interesting to learn about, you talked about how our food changed and we started becoming a society of people who ate out of boxes and bags. Yeah. But also just the makeup of our food changed.
Oh, yeah.
What is wheat today is not really wheat. It is all sugar in it, mm-hmm. and it's a byproduct. It's you know, it's man-made essentially.
Yes.
It's not wheat that our grandfathers ate. So we can't sit down and eat roll after roll and not gain weight and not become diabetic because that's not what we're eating today. And then you know, when I found out I was gluten intolerant, that was probably 5 or 6 years ago, and there were no gluten-free products out there. But the problem is, and this is why I try not to replace a sugar with a sugar, because it's just another type of sugar. If it's gluten-free, it just means it doesn't have any wheat in it, but it's got some other flour in it,
whether it be tapioca starch, rice, potato starch.
Yeah. So it's a sugar.
It's a sugar. It's still going to spike your sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great thing that you're saying. But when I tell patients is if you go to Europe, eat their pasta over there. Their pasta is different. Our food, our country is very different because our country's run on money. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about health. Mm-hmm. If you go overseas and eat Lucky Charms, the ingredient list on Lucky Charms over there does not look anything like our list over here. Because there's lots of things that are banned, like in Europe and stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's bad for you.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you pay enough money here, you can get stuff done.
Fascinating.
So what is an ideal diet that you think every American can follow? and I say diet.
Yeah.
Health.
Lifestyle.
Lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Yes. What foods do you recommend?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we eat too much sugar. And again, sugar in the form of sweet potatoes and rice and all these things you think is healthy.
Yeah.
So I say low carb and there's a lot of pushback. The problem is we're all addicts, and if we had longer time, you could go through the tobacco industry in the 80s, finally got in trouble, took over processed food companies, and that's when we all got sick. Mm-hmm. So our food is made hyper palatable. So you can't stop eating. Pizza is the number one. On the Yale score of 10 top addictive foods, pizza is the top because it has the perfect amount of salt, sugar, and fat.
That's
could eat
like
a whole pizza. Oh.
Yes.
And never blink twice.
Yep.
Like it's not hard.
Yep.
But you can't overeat salmon and broccoli. Nobody got fat on salmon and broccoli.
Right.
Because there's a stop. Okay. Because there's nutrients in our food that send signals to our brain and our stomach that we're full. There's none of that in pizza. So I say low carb. Now, if I'm trying to reverse diabetes, which I do every day in the clinic, I would say, 20 to 30 grams of carbs a day or less. If you exercise and you're metabolically healthy, some people can get away with 50. I have the record holder in my practice for an A1C is a type 1 diabetic. He's in his mid-50s. He's been a diabetic since he was 16. His A1C is 8. Okay, anything above 6.4 is full-blown diabetes. Mm-hmm. His endocrinologist was very happy about it. Diet and exercise has it controlled. An 8 A1C is a daily average blood sugar of about 180, 190. Mm-hmm. You're just damaging your interior vessels all day long. Mm-hmm. His A1C is 4.2 to 4.6. Because his low carb, but he owns a gym. Mm. He does personal boxing stuff, sessions with people, so he's moving way more than me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So he does 100 carbs a gram. 100 grams of carbs a day. Mm. And that's where he's at. If I ate 100 grams of carbs, I would be 20 pounds heavier than I am now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it depends on your activity level and your metabolic health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
and he probably would never have known that had he not gotten a different opinion.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And now he feels amazing. And
yeah.
his insulin dose went from I don't even remember now. It was probably 40 units a day.
Yeah.
I think he does 10 a day. Because type 1s can never get off insulin.
Right.
Type 2 diabetics, we can get you off medicine. We can reverse medicine. Blood pressure, 95% of blood pressure issues is insulin issues. Insulin makes you hold on to sodium in the kidneys. So your pressure goes up. Mm. As soon as someone starts eating the way I tell them to, they have to half or stop their blood pressure within a week. Their medicine. Depression, ADHD, schizophrenia, bipolar. Dr. Chris Palmer is an amazing psychiatrist at Harvard, just wrote a book. He talks about these diseases as sugar, mitochondrial diseases, metabolic disorders, food. He gets people off of bipolar, anxiety, and depression medicine and gets people weaned down on only but one or two schizophrenic medicines. And this is like amazing stuff that just diet does.
Based on diet.
But so say you have these problems, but you live with someone that's like, I'm not going to eat like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have patients that are making two dinners for their families, one for them. And so you can only do that for so long as an addict.
Right.
You can white knuckle it for only so long. And then you're going to succumb to cornbread or mac and cheese.
You are.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
I also want to mention, you talk about exercise, and we were talking before we got started here about just the importance of the basic, like walking, getting, you know, I think in that same podcast, they were talking about the difference between if you walk 7,000 steps and the, and how much difference there is walking 7 to 12, what it adds in terms of, your, helping your whole system.
Yeah.
And we're talking about something that, that is related to heart disease and stroke and all the psychiatric issues you talked about. I mean, just get out and move and get in the sunshine and go see Dr. Teresa. And
Well, and sometimes I say, just go outside and put your phone down and listen to the birds.
Yes.
Nature, we were not designed to be inside and, you know, not moving and eating this food-like substances that we call food and act like it's going to nourish our bodies. It's just not going to. But
The podcast I listened to today was Mel Robbins, and she had a doctor on that said, we have wasted, at the end of our lives, the average American will have wasted 20 years of their life scrolling and on screens. Ugh,
that's gross. Insane.
It is gross. And he said, until we get serious, like there, he talked about some schools that are changing the their policy on phones. Like you can't have your phone in the classroom anymore until we get serious about changing. Because he said the designers of Facebook, Instagram, all of those, there's no stop point. Yeah. You know, you watch a television show, there's a stop point. So you know at that point you should get up and do something else. There's no stop point when you're scrolling social media.
Well, and even TV now, we have binge-worthy. You can just sit and watch.
You get to the show. Yeah, yeah. So it's an epidemic, and I guess we're not covering that today. But it,
It's a lot.
But just I want our listeners to take away that, you know, there are other options if you're seeing an MD and you're not getting the answers. Obviously, there's other people that you can go and talk to. Hormone replacement might be right for you. And then just in addition, just doing the simple things, putting your phone down and walking and, like you said, hearing the birds, seeing. He even on this podcast talked about having an indoor water feature or, you know, just one of those little, I have one
relax.
Of these. It just plugs in. It's just it's just a little waterfall, a little water thing that sits in the corner. Yeah.
I will say that I'm on all these groups on Facebook now that we're talking about social media, but they go and they ask their provider to run a fasting insulin. The provider said, that's alternative medicine. Makes me giggle.
Oh,
and they refuse to do it, or they won't check a hemoglobin A1C until you're a certain age.
Yeah.
And then insurance makes you got to jump through all these hoops. Like an A1C is a 3-month test, but now insurance changed it. You can't check it every 6 months. So my suggestion, what you said, start about age 20 here in town. And I'm from Florida. I've been here about a decade, but we have these there too. Any lab test now, you can walk in and get most any lab panel or lab tests without a provider order. You can keep track on your own. There's too much online free information from people in like the low carb group that will give you what you need to figure out, like list of tests to do and different things like that. So you can go get it on your own.
Yeah. Excellent. And I didn't know that. I didn't know you could go get your lab work done without a provider. See, those things for people to be proactive and to know little secrets hidden in the medical society that, that people just don't share. Because, of course, the physicians want an office visit to be able to charge that and to order your lab panel. But then what if they won't order your lab panel?
And to defend them a little bit, insurance is a big...
Of course.
Okay, so then...
Starts there.
He or she has no idea what a fasting insulin even is, because we don't learn that, okay? Mm-hmm. So then they're like, I don't know how to code for it. Like, what diagnosis code do I put?
Yeah.
Even me, like, insurance... Because you can still file insurance for labs at my office. But then your insurance company... every morning I walk in and my receptionist has stacks of labs from Quest that they want a diagnosis. So I run a vitamin D on everyone. If you don't actually come back with a low vitamin D... What am I going to tell them? You don't have low vitamin D. If I say you do, that's insurance fraud. Mm. So now I have to say there's no additional codes. So now they're not going to pay for your vitamin D. Mm-hmm. It's,
yeah.
Okay, the people's hands are tied.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's why you just go out off on your own. Yeah. It's not super expensive. It's more expensive than my little self-pay prices I have. But it's a way that you can go get markers mm-hmm. on your own.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
I wanted to get an explanation of the bioidentical hormones mm-hmm. because yes. I think that phrase is mm-hmm. repeated over and over and people don't understand that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Can you explain
that? So bioidentical just means made to be molecularly exact to what you were already making. So all of us in our 20s had plenty of estrogen, plenty of testosterone, and plenty of progesterone. When I give you a bioidentical hormone, it's in the, for simplicity's sake, let's pretend our estrogen receptors in our body are squares. The estrogen that I prescribe you is a square. So when you take it, it fits lock and key in with your receptors.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. If you were to take pregnant horse pee, the mares have 13 estrogens. We share two. So your body would know what to do with two, but the other 11, they don't know what to do. Your mm-hmm. body doesn't know what to do with. Mm-hmm. So it becomes not molecularly exact. Now, another little caveat is the hormones that I prescribe are not FDA approved. Mm-hmm. When you get it through a compounding pharmacy, it's not FDA approved. Mm-hmm. There are FDA approved bioidenticals at the local pharmacies mm-hmm. through pharmaceutical companies. The problem is estrogen and progesterone have three sizes and that's it. So I personally am on not a size that they have at that pharmacy. And then I just don't, they're just not the same. Okay. Mm-hmm. But if you're using a reputable compounding pharmacy, which I do out of Utah, they're PCAB certified, so they've got third party checking, and I get levels on 600 patients consistently that I'm expecting to mm-hmm. get. So, but it's not FDA approved. Mm-hmm. Getting it through a compounding pharmacy.
Okay. And so, what is the primary kickback you get on that? The obvious thing is it's not FDA approved. Mm-hmm. But are there any studies that have been done on the bioidenticals that are not FDA approved from all of us users
right.
that are feeling really good?
Right. Mm-hmm. So you just said it. There is. And all the studies are done on the ones at, Walgreens and CVS and all that stuff. But they would call that anecdotal. But to mm-hmm. me, anecdotal is one. But this big group of people, mm-hmm. it's like low carb, it's anecdotal. But when you get groups of, hundreds of thousands of people doing it, mm-hmm. it becomes a little bit more than that. But yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But all the studies, there are studies on bioidenticals, mm-hmm. just not that I know of on the compounding pharmacy bioidenticals.
Got it.
Because there's no money. Like my little pharmacy in Utah is not going to pay for a $1 billion study. Mm-hmm. Like
of course
Wyeth, not. Who now is not owned, Premarin, but now they're owned by somebody else. Mm-hmm. Like the Women's Health Initiative was $1 billion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the 90s.
In the
Imagine
90s.
What it would cost mm-hmm. today.
Yes. Right. No one's going to ever redo that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We all know anyway, science is bought and paid for. Mm-hmm. So whoever's funding the study gets the result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's people that have, in my circles, that have gotten in big trouble because it helped them figure out, oh, this is not what I thought it was. And then you get in trouble,
mm-hmm.
taken to court, license in line, on the line.
Yeah. Hence why I couldn't get my MD gynecologist to even give me an opinion of what I should do, like mm-hmm. go jump out a window, go to another doctor. She wouldn't say anything.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that is changing just a little bit, but I have quite a few women who have had breast cancer on hormones,
mm-hmm.
and then I have a couple, too, that have had estrogen and progesterone receptive breast cancers who are on estrogen and progesterone, but the one has a very young male doctor, and he's like, yeah, no studies have ever shown that hormones cause hormonal receptive breast cancers. We all know the people that have gotten mm-hmm. diagnosed with that. And a lot of them are postmenopausal women.
Mm-hmm.
And I do levels on those women every day. Their levels are zero.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they have any making a breast cancer?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, but this one girl I'm talking about, woman is 20 years out of her breast cancer. So there's a much less risk there.
Yeah,
but a meta-analysis has been shown that if women who've had breast cancers go on hormones. There's no significant recurrence risk of the women on hormones mm-hmm. post-breast cancer than the women that didn't take hormones. It's pretty much the same. If you have cancer, there is a good chance recurrence is there.
Sure.
Okay, just
sure.
like if you've had a heart attack or stroke, there's a good chance you're going to have another one.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so, but listen, don't anyone ask me to be without my hormones, mm-hmm. yeah. which they're always threatening to take away. Always.
Yeah.
The biggest push that I've ever seen doing it is right before COVID. And then COVID kind of got them distracted. But
mm-hmm. interesting. And who's they?
It's the DEA and the FDA.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the powers that be that make the decisions in this country and mm-hmm. run things don't like me calling over testosterone for a female for $52 for 4 months.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's not making anyone money.
Right.
It's not making right. me, it's not making my compounding pharmacy
right.
any money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
It's all about money.
Yeah.
Follow the money.
Yeah.
Follow the money.
It's a shame, but that's what it is.
It really is. And I think one of the...
We're the only ones that lose.
Well, exactly.
Right. Right.
And the biggest takeaway, I think, from our conversation today is be your own health advocate. Mm-hmm. And I know you said that mm-hmm. at some point, Angie.
Mm-hmm.
But without me, myself, not liking what I was hearing and then being willing to go investigate it on my own, then I never would have... I have felt great for the last few years,
yes.
and it's because I was willing to, you know, to go to some extra doctor's appointments and, you know, go,
right.
go the extra mile.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that everybody and everybody's situation is completely different.
Yes.
There is
yeah.
no one that fits in this little hole.
Mm-hmm.
We're
mm-hmm.
all different, mm-hmm. but to come and get a different viewpoint from someone like you, I feel like would and has, because I hear of them coming
yes.
and getting an opinion
yes.
changes lives.
It does.
But what I tell people too is, you know, I do hormones all day long. So a GYN is in endocrinology is hormone experts.
Sure.
But a GYN is doing a pap smear on one woman. Then the other woman, she might be doing a pregnancy check. Then they might be doing a yeast infection check.
Sure.
She might see a hormone patient 6 times a week. Okay. Every single patient that walks through my door is a hormone patient.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I do feel like I'm a subject matter expert
yeah,
in
sure.
hormones. Again, don't come to me for neurosurgery. I don't.
Right.
And don't come to me for a rash.
Right.
I can't stand. I'm like, I don't know. Uh-huh. Okay. Unless it's chicken right. pox or something. But otherwise,
yeah.
you know, I mean, right. hormones is not on the agenda in school. You mm-hmm. only learn about Premarin and that's it.
Yeah. yeah.
And I hope future years of our MDs coming up in this world, that someone will say, let's put a little excerpt of this in the new books, mm-hmm. in the new textbooks. May not ever happen, but I sure hope it does.
I hope so too, but mm-hmm. I am pessimistic that it will be in my
yeah.
lifetime.
Yeah.
Because you already said
Agree.
It. It's about money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Money rules.
Money rules.
Sad.
Okay.
Well, thank you,
that.
Teresa.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Very
yeah. If anyone's on Facebook, my Facebook page is Teresa Mealy Total Health and Wellness.
Okay.
I do What's for Dinner most nights, and then we talk about metabolic health because that's a free and actionable thing
yeah.
people
mm-hmm.
can get.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you all day long how great hormones are, but you got to pay me to see me.
Yeah.
And then you got to pay to get them. But the metabolic stuff is free, actionable. Men can keep their testosterone and lots of things going for much longer than we can.
Mm-hmm.
But lifestyle does make a big difference. I'm just saying, once your ovaries are done, or a lot of women get them out. So like, then what?
True.
You can't change your food for your ovaries if they aren't there. So
right.
we have a little bit of harder time, but there are things that you can do to kind of keep the playing field level until it really falls off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one thing we didn't talk about was supplements. So
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there like a short list of supplements mm-hmm. that help everyone?
Most people, even my Florida patients, because I have a license there, are deficient in D. Mm-hmm. So most of my patients are on D and K. And mm-hmm. then D and K are good for bone and heart health.
Mm-hmm.
And then DHEA for men and women is something I make sure most of my patients are on that. That's mm-hmm. usually low. That's a very good one. And then, you know, I look at zinc and B12 and
mm-hmm.
Folate, magnesium,
mm-hmm.
all that. I don't overload. That's another thing is some of these functional health places that we talk about, they'll come in, some patients come in with 32 supplements.
Mm.
And I just, that's too many.
That's too many.
Yeah. But D and K, DHEA, and then, you know, sometimes some zinc, sometimes some mag, but those are the main ones that always come up. Because DHEA is a steroid. It's a hormone, even though it's an over-the-counter supplement. So it goes when the other stuff goes.
Got it.
So
I read an article about that recently, how important it was.
Yeah.
And magnesium. There's several different kinds, I've been on one before that I realized I was on the wrong one.
Yeah.
So can you give a quick explanation of what the different magnesiums are for and what they might benefit from?
There's about five or six, but I'm versed in three. So magnesium citrate is for constipation.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, I used to use that pretty exclusively when I first started, but everyone's like, that's too much. I'm in the bathroom a lot. Uh-huh. But that's what they give you for a colonoscopy prep.
Yes.
A part of it is magnesium citrate. Magnesium glycinate I take at night. That is to help you sleep, relax, anxiety, depression. Magnesium 3 and 8 is brain. So focus, memory, that kind of thing. Okay. And also you could do it at night for sleeping. And then there's oxide, malate, might be one more. I'm not too versed in those, but like MagCom, that's a mag citrate. It's a scoop that people do at night to calm them down and sleep. Mm-hmm. So magnesium is fantastic for a lot of things.
Yes.
So blood sugar and other things.
Lots of things.
But, you know, our life is busy. Real life is hard. So, you know, when you're trying to lay down at night, that's when your mind starts racing and you're like, did I leave a load of clothes in the... the laundry? Did I pack lunch? What are we having for dinner tomorrow? I mean, here's your husband. He wants to have sex. And you're like, what?
I'm busy over here. I mean, busy.
And then you have no libido anyway. I mean, let's just get back to living and loving our life instead of just dredging through every day, like go to work, pay some bills, make sure the kids don't die.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. So many years spent on making sure the kids did not die.
Don't die.
It's so true. It's so true.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you, Teresa. Yeah, and we will make sure that we put in the show notes the links to your Facebook and your website as well.
So that people can reach out. Sounds good. It was fun.
So, yeah.
I just want people to understand there's another way.
Yes.
But unfortunately, you have to go research and look. And I tell people you're going to know more about your provider on hormones and metabolic health.
Yes.
Which is sad.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is.
Yeah. So true, though.
Yeah. So true.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you so
much.
You're welcome. That was a great conversation. And thank you guys for tuning in. And thank you, Gershman Mortgage, for allowing us to bring this episode to our listeners.
We'll catch you next time. Thanks, guys. Thank you for listening to the Simply Authentic podcast. Be sure to hit follow so that you can see each episode as it pops up weekly.